This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome to another podcast from InsideCarolina.com, the independent voice of UNC Sports. Brought to you by JohnnyT-Shirt.com, the go-to provider for all your Tar Heel gear.
I'm your host, Tommy Ashley. You're listening to the Inside Carolina podcast, sponsored by Johnny T-Shirt, JohnnyT-Shirt.com. Of course, great friends of Inside Carolina, great friends of you, the Inside Carolina listener, subscriber, and all that. Speaking of subscribing, take a chance to subscribe on YouTube, subscribe to your Apple podcast, however you get your podcast, and rate us and review us. 5 stars, 1 stars, questions in your reviews. We'll ask those questions if you drop us a review with a question. It is Wednesday, recording this Wednesday night. Caught myself a little bit. You'll be listening to this Thursday morning, a little bit earlier than normal for the Game Plan podcast. That, of course, means I've got Greg Barnes and Jason Staples. Carolina travels to Charlottesville, 8 o'clock Saturday night, Halloween night in Charlottesville. Greg, I'll come to you first. Once upon a time, in the not too far off past, Carolina could not win up in Charlottesville. And now they've lost, what, 3 straight to Virginia going into this one. Bronco Mendenhall has had his Virginia teams take care of North Carolina in the recent history. Greg, this is a big game, I think, for North Carolina and the program and what Mack Brown's trying to accomplish. I know I say it every week, but going on the road on a Saturday night, especially given what happened 2 weeks ago, this makes this pretty solid event for North Carolina football.
Yeah, for sure. And I think one of the things that we've talked about here is this is a learning process for this team. Last year, nobody really expected a lot out of them. They surprised early with those 2 big wins over South Carolina and Miami, and then really fell back to earth before reeling off, you know, 3 wins there at the end of the year to finish with a winning record. So they haven't really played a lot of games with expectations. And when they have had to do that this year, they've had some issues. I mean, you know, Virginia Tech, they win a big game, come out the next time out on the road, they lose. They had a big rivalry win last week, of course, against NC State. So what do? You go back on the road, 8 o'clock game. You know, Mac has talked about the noon games you can handle because, you know, you don't have to worry about fans and all those kind of things. They're used to practicing in the morning. I think that's kind of an underrated point. You know, they get up at 6 o'clock for all their meetings. And so when you're talking about a noon kick, that's pretty much in their wheelhouse, what they're accustomed to. When you talk about 8 o'clock kick, that changes things. They have a lot of time to sit around and think about it. And when you add the fact that you're coming off that big rivalry win, now they're playing another physical team, a well-coached team. I think it's better than their record shows. Bronco Mendenhall, I think he's a great coach. I think he does a lot of unique and creative things. So it's going to be a test. I think in listening to Jay Bateman and Phil Longo, both of them were a little bit impressed, and both of them were praised what Virginia's coaching staff has done and just kind of how challenging this test will be. Virginia's 1-4, but again, they haven't really played that way. This is a 7-point spread for a reason, and it's going to be a tough test for North Carolina.
Jason, Virginia beat Duke, opened the season 38-20, not unexpectedly. Then they play Clemson, at Clemson and at Miami. Pretty similar to Florida State. Of course, Florida State replaced Clemson with Notre Dame. Not sure there's a ton of difference there, but I said it off the air. I want to come to you on this. I think this is a pretty similar situation, Carolina going to Virginia, as it was going to Florida State. It's certainly two teams that are capable of beating North Carolina. Did the lesson from Tallahassee stick with this Tar Heel bunch?
Well, the last question, I think, is
we'll see.
Is a we'll see. I mean, we don't know. I mean, if I could answer that one, I would not have some of the debt that I have. So, yeah, as far as the comparisons, I think it's fair. Although I actually think this Virginia team is probably better than that Florida State team. So for one thing, I think there is a pretty big difference between Clemson and Notre Dame for one thing. And secondly, that Florida State team got blown out. I mean, they got their doors blown off by Miami. They got out hit. They got out. They got just whipped by Miami. And that was a 19-14 game last week with Virginia, same Miami team. And they were able to slug it out. I mean, yes, there's a different situation. It was rainy. There were all sorts of other factors. There is an ugly, muddy game, but that's kind of what Virginia wants to do. And yes, that was when Florida State, before Florida State changed quarterbacks, which has really made a difference for them. So yeah, you take that with a little bit of a grain of salt and, you know, all of the transitive property stuff that you might say, but still, I mean, I think if you looked at those two teams and the results so far on the year, I think Virginia is probably a more consistently physical and more reliable football team than Florida State, though Florida State probably has a little bit higher highs given Virginia's lack of any sort of deep threats in terms of the passing game. But I think overall this Virginia team, I think you're right to make that comparison, and this is a dangerous game for North Carolina for a lot of reasons.
100% there. Greg, looking at Virginia, how is this team 1-4? I mean, I know this is not the Virginia podcast and we don't watch them a lot, but when I saw them play against Miami and I saw some of the game against Clemson, they've got guys that can play, but then NC State just wears them out. Wake Forest beats them. Bronken Mendenhall talked after the Wake Forest game. It was like a stretch of 5 or 6 minutes in that game that just turned everything around. But with Brennan Armstrong at quarterback and Billy Kemp at wide receiver, I mean, this team, like Jason said, a dangerous ball game for Carolina.
Yeah, I think this is somewhat of the 2020 component. But think about it. I mean, they handled Duke in the opener. They lost a competitive game against Clemson. I think they could take away a lot of things in that game. That was 41-23 against what I think is clearly the best team in the country. And then what happens against NC State? Well, Devin Leary was playing for one, but Brennan Armstrong goes out due to a concussion. He misses a big chunk of that game. NC State wins. He misses the Wake Forest game. Wake Forest is playing better. Virginia just can't make up the deficit without their starting quarterback in. They get Armstrong back for Miami. And as Jason said, that was kind of a messy game. But that does play into what Virginia would like to do anyway. And that was just really kind of a slugfest. I think Derek King was the difference maker there. I know their wide receiver. It's a little bit too quick for Virginia's secondary, which has been an issue for them. But that was a really competitive game, and that was a fun game to watch. So having to play two legitimate teams in Clemson and Miami, and then having an injury to your quarterback that knocks him out the better part of two games is how you quickly arrive at 1-4.
Jason, before we get into the actual what to expect to see, because I think Carolina does have some advantages in this that we'll cover a little bit later in the podcast, but I wanted to ask you as a guy that's been on rosters about the 8 o'clock difference. Now, if this wasn't 2020, then 8 o'clock games in prime time is what everybody wants. Is that worm kind of turned a little bit? And Mac Brown seems to hint that way, that 8 o'clock games are not the best deal for teams. I mean, square that conversation that Mac Brown had with the media about having a little worry over an 8 o'clock ball game.
Well, I mean, I think Greg's point earlier is that they're a morning practice team. So for them, for UNC, it's less of an event. It's not something that you look forward to as much. And it's just because you're not used to being – I mean, most of you out there who are watching this, you probably have some sort of workout regimen or some sort of approach. And some of you might get up and – you know, I know some IC staffers get up in the morning and go and do a you know, like an F3 workout or something, or you know, a CrossFit workout at like 5:30 in the morning. And they do this, you know, 5-6 times a week. Now, they'll do that, but here's the thing. If you took them, yeah, I was waiting on it. It wouldn't be Greg, right? But if you're doing that at 5:30, 6 o'clock in the morning, 5-6 days a week, and then all of a sudden I was going to say, hey, let's go and do a, you know, really, you know, the most intense workout you're going to do all week, and we'll do it at 8 o'clock to 10 o'clock on a Saturday night.
I'm in bed.
Yeah. I mean, you're used to getting up at 5:30, 6 o'clock and hitting it then. And now I'm going to switch that up and have you do it 12 to 15 hours later on the clock than you're used to going. Your whole body is just not in the rhythm to do that. It's outside your comfort zone. So I think that's really what Mac's after. I think the other part of this, if it's not 2020, is a night game on the road. Also, you're dealing with the atmosphere issue gets that much more amplified. I think it's a little bit more of a disadvantage on the road. The final factor for this is if you are on the road and you've got an 8 o'clock game, I think it makes it that much harder. I mean, teams try to even things out by staying oftentimes in hotels and things like that. Most teams do that in terms of staying in a hotel for home games as well, just to make sure everybody's together and you're doing everything the same way at home that you would on the road. But it's still different when you go on the road and you spend the entire day in the hotel. I mean, you think about it. You wake up and you're used to waking up at 5:30 in the morning to get to practice, or 6 o'clock in the morning to go to morning practice. And now you wake up and you're on the road in a hotel. And there is literally nothing to do except, well, we're going to have a walkthrough at some point. We did last night, but we'll probably do something just to pass the time to try to give us something to occupy. So we're going to go to lunch, have a lunch, maybe extend that lunch a little longer, try to take a nap in there, make sure everybody gets a nap so that they can reset their bodies a little bit for the late game, and then do lunch, maybe another nap. But by now you're kind of slept out, and like, what are you going to do? Sit and watch TV, watch some film. You know, there's only so much you can do, and you're just kind of, you're doing this all day, and you're doing that all day for an 8 o'clock game anyway. I mean, anybody who's played at any level knows that when you've got a night game and you've got a game that day, I mean, you're just like this the whole day, like looking forward to it and just chomping at the bit. Like, I just want to get out there. That's so much more amplified when you're on the road and you're waiting 14 hours from the time that you're used to getting up to actually get on the field. And, you know, you're not going to get to the stadium until 6 o'clock at the earliest, really. So, you know, you get there at 6:30, and you've been sort of chewing on the whole day, and that's hard. So when you're a road team, especially, 8 o'clock games are hard already. And when you're a road team, that's a morning team, it's something significant to think about. And I think that's something that Mac is right about.
Greg, has there been that you can tell, and I know people listening to this will say we're making excuses, and I don't think so. I think it matters, but is there anything you can tell that Carolina's done differently this week? Maybe they didn't do preparing for Florida State in that regard, in the timing issue.
Now, there's not a whole lot you can do with regard to the schedule, just because, you know, they set their practice schedule in the off season, and then they work class schedules around that. So there's not a whole lot you can do. You just kind of deal with it. And I'm sure that they've probably come up with new things to try to kind of keep the guys busy, because there is some boredom in play there. But, you know, it is what it is, and you've got to figure out how to overcome that. And that's part of it. I mean, there's so many variables that go on beyond the you know, lines on the field that you have to learn to cope with, whether it's criticism in the media, whether it's praise in the media, whether it's, you know, fans coming up to you wondering why you didn't beat Florida State when you were big-time favorites. Whatever it may be, that's part of the learning process. And that's for North Carolina to get to where they want to be, they've got to be able to navigate some of those challenges.
Yeah, they got to be able to put all that behind them and play a big ball game 8 o'clock Saturday night against Virginia up there. Let me take a short break, talk about Johnny T-Shirt, johnnytshirt.com. Great friends of Inside Carolina, great friends of you, Inside Carolina premium subscribers, because you get 10% off your order. Christmas is coming up, and there's a bunch of sales. I can't get a Johnny T-Shirt will hook you up. They'll deliver it straight to your door. But if you're in town, go by and see them. Say hello, socially distance shopping and all that stuff. They're even bring it to your car or bring it to the curbside.
Pick up a mask.
Pick up a mask, absolutely. You need masks. Folks, I know, I wish they had more masks. We need more masks, especially around Halloween. That can double time. Johnny T-Shirt, johnnytshirt.com. Please visit them. They need your support, as do all small local businesses. Take another second for the national guys to pay the bills. We'll be right back. Game Plan Podcast, Greg Barnes, Jason Staples. I'm your host, Tommy Ashley.
Introducing the two-way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the two-way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the two-way for yourself at newbalance.com.
Rise and shine, football fans. This is Susanna Fuller from Morning Footy, a podcast part of the CBS Sports Galazzo Network covering the breadth of the global game. Join me, Nico Cantor, Charlie Davies, Alexis Guerreros, and guests every morning for the perfect blend of news, analysis, conversation, and exclusive interviews. If you love soccer, then look no further. We've got you covered for Europe's top five leagues, the W Gold Cup, the Champions League knockout stage, CONCACAF Nations League, NWSL, MLS, transfer news, and much more. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere podcasts are found. Subscribe to Morning Footy.
All righty, we're back. Game Plan Podcast, Virginia, North Carolina, Greg Barnes, Jason Staples. I am Tommy Ashley. Speaking of schedules, we usually record this during the day, and now we're recording this on Wednesday night. So it's certainly
8:30 kickoff for us tonight, and yeah, it makes a difference, doesn't it?
Yeah, we adjusted, Mac. Can you adjust? Greg, looking at Virginia, just to make sure I'm clearly refreshed for this question. We've got to get Jason on board at some point. We talked about Brennan Armstrong, but Virginia has a weird quarterback rotation at times, but Armstrong's clearly the guy. That's at least the quarterback. What can Carolina fans maybe expect to see from Virginia on Saturday if they haven't been paying attention to the Wahoos?
Well, I think what Virginia wants to do, this is not a very dynamic offense. I mean, I think the same could be said about last year. I think that's one of the interesting storylines is Bryce Perkins had a heck of a game against North Carolina last year. He had 490 total yards of offense. And I think that elevated him in some UNC fans' eyes to like a Michael Vick status. And that's just not – that's not kind of what he was. He had some big games against Carolina and Virginia Tech. It was good the rest of the year, but he wasn't that good. And I think a lot of people will probably be surprised to know that Virginia's already – their quarterbacks already have half as many rushing yards as Perkins did in 14 games last year. And so I think that's important. There's a big reason that we talked about the QB run and defending the QB run this week. And that's because that's an integral part of what Virginia wants to do. And the reason why is because they don't have some incredible – skill players. I mean, whether it be a running back or wide receiver. Lavelle Davis is their freshman standout. He's a freshman All-America candidate type player. 6'7", 210, huge guy they could throw vertically down the field with. Didn't play against Miami, and he's not expected to play against North Carolina. They will get the Indiana – they expect to get the Indiana running back able to play Saturday. He hadn't played yet this year. But they just don't have the talent. What they do have is a very good offensive line. And so they have to be very methodical in what they do offensively. And the QB run's a big part of it. So Brennan Armstrong is a guy, he's 6'1", like 215. He's a big guy. He's heady. Broncos really praise him for his toughness. I think if you watch the Miami game, he's not afraid to take a lick. He's not afraid to lay a hit. And I think that's what you like to see. This is not an offense that's going to put up a ton of yardage or a ton of points, but they're going to be, as I said, methodical. They're going to try to move the ball down the field. You play kind of an old school type where you lean on your defense. You kind of keep the game short. You really, Bronco talks a lot about time management and kind of controlling the clock. And that's what they want to do. So North Carolina just has to play clean. And if they can do that, things will probably work in their favor. But Virginia is just a kind of a tough, gritty type team.
You mentioned that Bryce Perkins last year in Keenan Stadium. I've seen a lot of games in Keenan Stadium. That performance by him and then Lamar Jackson, Louisville a couple of years ago, probably two of the top ever in Keenan Stadium. No matter what he did the rest of the year, Bryce Perkins was ridiculous against North Carolina. Jason, defending that quarterback run, what has Carolina improved on that you've seen? Maybe obviously they didn't have to worry about it against NC State, but from the Florida State game, what has Carolina or what does Carolina need to do to improve to prevent Brennan Armstrong from giving them fits from that position on the ground?
Well, I mean, it's always hard when you have a quarterback that can run. I mean, that's the truth of the matter. And this guy, by the way, throws the ball better than Florida State's Jordan Travis. He's a better thrower. So they don't have the receiver threats that Florida State did, even with Terry out, in terms of being able to stretch you, which helps. But the thing that makes it so difficult when you're playing against a quarterback run is that they get an extra blocker. It changes the numbers. So if you think about this, imagine you go man-to-man on five wide receivers, five potential receivers that can go out for any pass. Now, if you're straight man and you've got no deep safety, that's really hard because if one guy gets beat, that's a big play. So most teams at most typically go man-free, and so you got a free safety back there. Well, the problem is that in the run game then, that means – you really only have the players to match up and take on all the blockers that are there. And then you have one unblocked defender for the running back. If the running back carries or whoever carries other than the quarterback, as soon as the quarterback is involved in the running game, the guy that would be the unblocked guy for the quarterback is that deep safety who might be 15 yards off the ball. And the thing is, if he comes up hard to try to stop the quarterback run, now you're opening up for, you know, the quarterback to, you know, give a little bit of a little nudge forward or something like that to show run or read option type stuff where you've got play action, safety starts coming up, and then you hit him at that second level in an RPO. So that really makes things so much harder on any defense. It's not just North Carolina. Every fan base thinks that they're uniquely bad at stopping the quarterback run. But the truth is, it's really hard to stop at any level. And look at teams in the NFL try to stop guys like Lamar Jackson when they're on. I mean, the fact is that when you've got that guy who can do that, it just makes it so hard on a defense. Now, at the NFL level, you don't see it as much for two reasons. One is they can't throw the ball with offensive linemen downfield as much, so the RPO game is devalued. It's the way that things should be, to be honest. And secondly, if you run your quarterback a ton in the NFL, he's going to get knocked out. And not if he doesn't get knocked out, then by the time you get to, you know, week 8, week 10, he's really banged up. And actually, I remember, I think it was Joey Galloway that said that the most incredible athletes he ever saw at the NFL level were Barry Sanders and Michael Vick in the first 2 to 3 weeks of a season.
Before the toll starts.
Before the toll started on. And he said, Barry, you know, he was running back. That's just what happens. But he said, it was Michael Vick in the first 2 to 3 weeks of a season before the toll of teams taking their shots on him started to come in. He said it was just different. And you can see that at that level. Now, at the college level, it's just not the same way. So that's the first thing, is it's hard for everyone. And what you try to do is you try to regain numbers by having one guy. Let's say Vohasic can take two gaps. If he can handle two gaps by himself, maybe in tandem with a little bit of scraping from a linebacker, if you can have Vohasic take two gaps, then you regain the numbers. If you have two guys up front that can take two gaps, then that's even better. You're regaining numbers. And that's what that's why a lot of teams use odd fronts and use, you know, say a guy over the center that tries to take both A gaps, because in the college game with all the quarterback run, teams are doing everything they can to try to stop that without sacrificing that deep safety. Another thing that a lot of teams do is play a lot of quarters. And the reason you play cover four is because those safeties are at about 9 yards, 8-9 yards off the ball usually. And you know it's quarters and not cover two, by the way, just as a tip. If you're watching on television, normally you can tell that it's quarters and not cover two, where you've got two deep safeties, by the fact that the defense is flat across. So you see corners and safeties roughly at the same level in terms of off the ball. That and now some teams will press on that, but that's a different question. But when you see the safeties up just a little bit, that usually means that they're in quarters. And what that means is they're going to be responsible for that second vertical on the inside. But if there is no second vertical, then he kind of becomes an extra box player. So you get, you know, teams like Pitt, for example, Narduzzi plays almost all cover four. And he talks about how they're a 9-man in the box team as a result, because whichever side you run to, they've got an extra support player, and then they can work with the other safeties kind of working off of that. And there are different things you can do to take advantage of that, but that's what a lot of teams do. And actually Virginia has played a good bit of quarters this year as well. So that's one of the things that you can do, but you better have really good corners and coverage and some safeties that can run. Otherwise you're going to have bombs over Baghdad. It's going to be teams shelling you on the deep post, because you don't have a whole lot of support from the safeties there. So you're always going to give something up trying to stop the quarterback run. The question is what you are willing to give up, and based on matchup, what are the things that they do in addition to the quarterback run that gives you problems? And to me, that's where the fact that Virginia's best wide receiver, best deep threat, really their only deep threat, is out for this game, or at least last I saw was out for this game, supposed to be. That matters to me. I'm looking at that as Jay Bateman. I'm going, okay, that tells me something. That tells me that I feel like I can go quarters pretty much all game in this game, in this one. I don't have to worry about some of those guys running by me like what happened a couple times at Florida State. And I can add that extra guy in my run support, and maybe those safeties can make some tackles on that quarterback at the 2-3 yard mark, because they can come up a little quicker and you don't worry about it as much.
So shameless plug opportunity. If I can see all four DBs on the TV screen, the way they shoot the game, that means they're in quarters, right? Show the safeties.
Show the safeties, baby.
Sign the petition. Greg, let's stick with Carolina's defense right here. Don't know the status of Patrice Renee. I don't guess they updated him. I thought Dede Hollins looked pretty good against NC State. Should we expect more of the same from Hollins and Kyler McMichael and those guys taking away Virginia's threats, any threat they may have downfield, and then allowing the safeties to come up and defend Armstrong?
Yeah, I don't know that the NC State game's the best platform to be able to judge Hollins adequately, just because State's quarterbacks just were not very good, I think is a fair way. There's a reason Devin Leary is clearly the guy there. But it was a learning opportunity for Hollins. And I think if you remember back to this game last year, Virginia's strategy was very easy. Short passing game, and North Carolina had 3 QB pressures the entire game. Strobridge complained about that after the game. He was like, hey, we can't get to him because they were getting rid of the ball so quickly. And what was he doing? He was throwing those back shoulder fades and throws on the sideline at Storm Duck and at Hollins. And Carolina had no answer. I don't think this is a situation where Armstrong can necessarily do that as well as Perkins did. But the fact that North Carolina once again has some injuries in the secondary, especially at cornerback, doesn't bode well. But that's one of the reasons that I think the run game is so important for Virginia. Because if you're having to rely on the pass, that's going to be problematic. But if you're able to elect to throw when you want to throw, and kind of how you want to, that changes things pretty dramatically. But North Carolina, you as Jason said, with North Carolina liking to use their man against QB runs. Bateman talked about that this week. Like, look, you know, if the quarterback makes one guy miss, the next closest guy to him's maybe guys back to him because he's playing man. And so he's going to have to scheme up something to kind of protect in that regard. But I think Hollins has, to your question, Tommy, he has gotten better. He has made strides. They've done a good job with him. But I do think it's very telling that Don Chapman is a guy that they decided very quickly last week, hey, we've got to teach him how to play cornerback and give him some more reps so we can lean on him some more.
Yeah, I thought Vip and EJ and Mike Ingersoll's podcast, the Don Chapman comments were the highlight of that show. The drop touchdown turn interception was Don Chapman's playing career all in like 15 seconds. And you're right. He's, you know, he's all over the field. They ask a lot of him to kind of have him.
And Trey Morrison.
Yeah, and Trey Morrison to have those guys all over the field with the injuries. Let's flip it to North Carolina's offense. And, you know, Sam Howell's just been fantastic. Javonte, Michael Carter. But, Jason, this is a game I think Sam Howell and his wide receivers are going to go nuts. I think Virginia struggles. It's kind of like Florida State had bad linebackers, and Carolina did not take advantage of them. I cannot imagine Phil Longo not taking advantage of Virginia's. I think Virginia's weakness is their defensive backfield, and I think this is Sam Howell's feast day. Jason, your thoughts?
It's safeties. To me, you attack their safeties as much as you can. And so this should be a good day for a guy that's had kind of a quiet year so far compared to expectations, and that's Daz, who I think has just not been the focal point of the offense to this point, though defenses have been actively trying to take him away from Howell. So I think Daz Newsome is a guy that could have a pretty good day in this one. Look for a double move or two on a couple of those safeties, because they'll get a couple man situations or at least quarters type situations against those safeties, and they'll double move those guys with him and after hitting a couple underneath, and that's where you'll probably see a big player too. I'm also interested to see if Josh Downs has a pretty good outing after he started to see the field more in the last week with Bo Relliford out and with, you know, him starting to figure things out with Downs starting to figure things out a little bit in terms of the offense and getting his feet, you know, getting his sea legs in college as far as that. So, yeah, I think that this is a game where I agree with you that that's an area that they can exploit. Virginia is very physical up front. They're generally pretty good against the run, as they showed against Miami, but they can give up some big plays, and Miami missed several, just would have been a no doubt touchdown, particularly to the slots. One actually on the last drive, they were trying to kill the clock and they had an RPO where Virginia was trying to stop the run. And the quarterback, just De'Eriq King, he made the right read. Receiver just comes right inside that safety on a little glance route, which is a little deeper slant. And he's, if the ball's put there on time, on target, he's still running. I mean, we're recording this Wednesday night. There's still nobody from Virginia within the screen. And he overthrew it. I mean, just wasn't even in the same zip code. And I'm going to tell you right now, Sam Howell ain't missing that throw. And there are a few of those that, you know, there were some opportunities that Miami missed to blow that game open. And that's where North Carolina needs to capitalize on those, especially if they can get a couple of those looks early and they can capitalize on those and get an early lead. This game changes with a quickness. If Carolina can get up 10 to 17 points, you know, before the mid third quarter, this game's over. Cause I don't think Virginia can score a ton of points. Even, I mean, North Carolina's defense has some vulnerabilities. We know that just personnel wise, but this Virginia offense is not going to score 50 points. So, you know, you can change that. And frankly, I mean, you made the comparison to Florida State. If Florida State doesn't block a punt and score on the first play that they get, you know, basically from the, 20, 22 yard line or whatever on that first drive, if they don't block a punt, get the ball there and then score on the next play, Florida State doesn't win that game.
That changed
everything. That gave that team a tremendous amount of confidence, that convinced them, that sold them that we can beat this team. And then you're playing from ahead. And that Florida State team is similar to Virginia in that they're not going to go out there and play from behind and chase you down in a track meet. but they can run the ball well enough that if you're going to give them, if you're going to spot them 10 points or 17 points or 24 points or whatever, if you're going to spot them that, then they're going to run it well enough to make it really hard to catch up. And that's the same thing for Virginia. So to me, if you start even reasonably well in this game, then you feel pretty good that you're going to come away with it. You just can't let Virginia play from the from ahead in the driver's seat. You get in the driver's seat against Virginia, and they're going to have a really hard time catching up. That's my view.
Yeah, and Tommy, to build off that a little bit, in the ACC, Virginia has allowed 15 passing plays of 30 yards or more, which is the worst in the ACC. You talk about their run defense. They allowed Clemson, I think, 4.2 yards per carry, which is really good. And Bronco's upfront about that. He's like, look, I think we're doing a really good job defending the run. He's happy with what he's getting up front. But the secondary's a little bit of a mess. And I think a lot of people may look at last year and say, well, Howe had a field day last year. He had scored 31 points, had a heck of a game. True, Virginia had six defensive backs out in that game, including their All-American and Bryce Hall. So a little bit different situation, but clearly, I think Jason's spot on there in that the team that's going to score a lot of points in this one clearly is North Carolina, if it's going to happen. And this is one of those, if Virginia wins, it's going to be a tight, tight game. If Carolina wins and some things break their way, they could win by three touchdowns pretty easy. This is not a game that Virginia is going to blow Carolina out. But I think they know that, too, and they play to that style. And so North Carolina has to be willing to take opportunities. That was a big criticism for Phil Longo there in the first half at Florida State. He was so adamant sticking with his game plan, he didn't take as many shots down the field as a lot of people thought he should have. And then things opened up in the second half. So be willing to take some shots down the field. And if you hit on one or two of those, completely changes the complexion of the game. I mean, dramatically, because Virginia really doesn't have that big splash play capability. They're going to methodically work their way down the field. Carolina doesn't have to do that. So I think that's a key part of how this is going to play out.
Yeah, looking at Virginia's stats, I mean, they've obviously been outscored heftily this season, but in the first quarter alone, opponents 55, Virginia 10. So, Greg, how does Longo approach it? Does he take those kill shots early, or does he rely on Javonte and Michael Carter early? I think it's the former. I think they come out like in 2010. It's interesting. We'll have a special guest on Inside Carolina Live show to talk about that 2010 game. Dwight Jones went nuts. I think that's the game he went nuts. Are we going to see something similar to that? And let's not forget, when was the last time Mack Brown won in Virginia? So he's got a big gorilla on his back that he needs to get off. So let's talk about what we will see, our predictions on what we'll see, Greg. I'll let you go first.
Well, let me say this, not to pick on Art Chansky, but it's worth listening to Wednesday's media interview with Mack, because Art, and I think it's a valid question by Art, but he asked about that 96 game in Virginia.
And asked about
how much Mack had thought about it, blah, blah, blah. And so, Mack answers it very, very graciously. And then later, 10 minutes later, answers some other random question. He made the comment that, just kind of think back to that Virginia game that Art's having such a hard time letting go of.
That is great.
It was a trip. It was very well played.
That's the theme in those pressers. Oh, away game pressers. I hadn't seen him in a home game presser yet.
But it was funny. What did you ask me?
I said, what will we see? I think it's a first round Mike Tyson, Michael Spinks type.
Gotcha. So the good thing about Phil Longo, what has he done effectively this year? I mean, he scripted plays fantastically. Other than the Florida State game, North Carolina scored a touchdown in their opening drive every single game. And so you have to give him credit and give the team credit for coming out, being prepared to play. And if anything, some of these games, Max talked about, hey, we came out, we played great early, and maybe we got a little cocky and we allow teams to come back in. We saw that against Boston College. But they've had a lot of success early in these games, and not just on offense, but defense as well. Defense has gotten a number of three and outs to start. And that's, I mean, it doesn't matter who you're playing. If you can do that every game, that really gives you a leg up. And that's critical, especially when you have an offense like Carolina does, where you can really apply pressure. I mean, if you've got the lead and you can score like they do, it makes it very difficult for the opponent to kind of keep up. And I think that's exactly the case here. Does that mean Longo comes in wanting to fling the ball down the field? Not necessarily. I mean, he's still going to take what the defense gives him. Is he going to take some shots potentially if they're there? Are there going to be those kind of play calls installed? Yeah, of course. But they want Sam to be cautious and take what's there. But if you can get Diami deep, try it. I mean, just watching – what's the kid's name from Miami? Harley. He was just a much better athlete than anybody Virginia had in the secondary. And that first touchdown he scored, I mean, he had a good move on his route. He just outran the guy. And
one-on-one against the safety.
Right.
From the slot.
Yep.
It's what we're going to see.
And so you get Diami. I mean, you can – a number of guys from North Carolina, but Diami being the obvious one. Get him in that kind of situation. We know Sam can throw the deep ball. And those are the opportunities that are going to present themselves. And North Carolina just has to capitalize.
Jason, what happens?
That's a good question. I think this is a dangerous game. I really do. This is a team that can beat North Carolina, just like Florida State was a team that could beat North Carolina. At the same point, I do think that they'll have learned some lessons, and I think that this game really – the thing that has me defaulting to Carolina being able to come out not only with a win, but a win that I think might be more comfortable than not is I just don't see a deep threat on the Virginia team. So they're going to have to be – I mean, now last year they were able to possession pass Carolina to death. I mean, they ran spacing, just a little, you know, two curls and a little flat route where you basically choose which curl is going to be open if they, you know, if they cover the flat. They ran that to death against Carolina last year, and Carolina had trouble covering it. But I don't think that's going to be the case this year in terms of Carolina's back seven. I think Carolina's back seven is a good bit stronger now than it was last year when they played Virginia. I think it's going to be harder for them to just matriculate the ball down the field bit by bit and just hold on to the ball for long, long stretches. I think Carolina will be able to knock them off schedule a little bit with the secondary being able to cover those receivers and not being afraid of being run by. And, you know, last year, I know Bateman at times was limited in some of the coverages that he could play because he knew that if he played certain coverages, it was probable that within a drive or two, you're looking at a deep, long touchdown that they just couldn't stop. Because once they had all those injuries, they couldn't run with teams. With the guys that they're putting out there now, I think they're going to play tight coverage across the board. That's going to allow them to focus a little bit more on the running quarterback with the safety a little bit. And because they don't have those deep threats, and that's really what knocked them off balance defensively against Florida State when they gave up some plays, was having to worry about getting run by while still stopping the quarterback run. I don't think that's as much of a problem in this game. I do think Virginia will hang around for a little bit, but ultimately I think Carolina comes out, does their business, you know, probably up 10 at the half, maybe more at the half, and then sort of pulls away in the second half. That's my guess.
Yeah, Brennan Armstrong will throw it to the other team. He's got 6 interceptions on the year. Lindell Stone with 3. So Virginia 9 total interceptions. So Carolina will have some opportunities there as long as they don't do what they allowed Bryce Perkins to do. Like you mentioned, I mean, everybody talked about he couldn't throw it and had a pretty solid game against Carolina in Keenan Stadium, if you want to call 500 yards total offense solid. Let's do the prediction deal. We ought to get a sponsor for our predictions. I don't know if anybody would pay us any money on the stuff we divvy out. But, Jason, I think I started with Greg last time. I'll start with you this time. I hear what you're saying. I kind of like what you're selling. But how's it ultimately come out? Give me a score.
So this is one I think Carolina covers in this game, for those of you who are sporting gentlemen. I think again, there's a chance that they could come out and lay an egg against a team that matches up in some respects better, pretty well. But I think you're right that Howell's going to have a pretty good outing in this game, and that they're going to walk away with a solid win. I'm going to go with Carolina 45, Virginia 17. I'll go with that as the final score. I think they really pull away in the second half.
Interesting. Greg Barnes, you're up. And before you pick, we have mentioned Michael Carter and Javonte Williams in passing in this show. That's incredible given what they bring to the table. But anyway.
Yeah. Oh, one other thing I should mention. You know, last week I did hit the score.
On the money.
Did you really?
Both sides.
I had 45-28, so I was close to.
Yeah, you were.
You netted.
I hit both. That's first time that's happened since I think 2016 or 2017.
Yeah.
We need a golf clap button.
Yeah,
I need it.
Even a blind squirrel, man. Yeah.
I will send you your parting gift, Greg.
Yeah, so I'll add two things in before I give you a score. One, you mentioned Carter and Williams. Nobody has contained them this year. Florida State did the best job of anybody, and those guys really got loose in the second half. And so that's Virginia's strength defensively. And if Carolina is able to have success on the ground, I don't think Virginia has much of a chance at all. And that's how this game can get out of hand. I'm curious to see how that plays. The other thing is we like – Pro Football Focus. Brennan Armstrong has got an 84 grade passing with no pressure. So
what's North Sam Carolina's Howell's?
Probably about the same here. Hang on. Let me look this up.
This is live stats, folks.
This is live stats.
Greg Barnes doing the research on the podcast as we go. I would bet you
pressure 90.7. So Sam is a good bit better, but both those numbers are really impressive. Point being that the North Carolina's weakness defensively has been getting pressure on the quarterback. They had success against Syracuse and really have not since. So that's you talk about Williams and Carter, that tilts North Carolina's way possibly. But if Virginia is really able to dominate the line of scrimmage on both sides, that's how they can steal this game. I agree with Tommy. I think the fact that North Carolina's offense can probably sneak in a home run here or there is going to be the difference. And I just don't think Virginia can match that. So I've got North Carolina winning this one. Not near as big as Jason, but I've got them at 31-17.
So you talk about football, Pro Football Focus, and a lot of people don't like those numbers for whatever reason. But I will call out the number they nailed last week, and that was 5. Bailey Hockman's grade against pressure was 5. I'd be interested to know what he was against pressure against Carolina. Maybe he didn't throw it in the ground every time, but it was pretty close. I mentioned Matt Brown's Charlottesville hoax for a reason. Mac had never beaten Florida State either. So I don't think I don't know necessarily if that stuff matters or if the players care or even know, but for some reason, I'm kind of superstitious. This game is on Halloween. I'm not picking Virginia. I think Carolina can just score too many points, but it would not surprise me if it were close. That said, I'm going to go – Jason, you had 45-17, Greg, 31-17. I'm going to go 40-14, Carolina. I think turnovers will be big against Virginia. I mentioned the interceptions. I think – Brennan Armstrong will try to do too much a few times and Carolina can take advantage. I just see Sam Howell going nuts. I mean, he's been good this year. He hadn't had a breakout game. I see 400 yards passing, maybe 4 touchdowns. If Carter and Williams get 100 yards apiece for somehow, then Carolina scores 60 points. I think that's how big a game Sam Howell will have. Anyway, boys, it's always fun. Getting a little done a little early Wednesday night refreshments. Go, Jason. We're in Zoom class. You're muted.
Got unmuted. There we go. I I'm in the process of pulling up the Bailey Hockman numbers from last week. You wanted them. You wanted live stats here. So let's see. We've got Bailey Hockman under pressure. His rating against North Carolina was 116.7.
Under pressure?
Uh-huh.
116, so isn't that good?
That's the best he's had all season, which means that was the best that Bailey Hockman's looked against pressure all season for NC State, which Carolina fans, just go ahead and say an extra prayer of thanks for what you're watching with Sam Howell.
After he was yanked, he came back in and played a lot there in the second half.
I'd like to see if they broke it down pre-benching and post-benching.
Right.
Because, he was throwing against high school guys. Tony Grimes was out there. So
Ben Finley was 39.6 NFL passer rating against pressure. So
sounds right. Yeah.
Interesting. That's almost throw it straight in the ground on every play.
Sam Howell, by the way, was only 39.6 against under pressure against NC State as well. It's just he wasn't really under much pressure.
Incredible ball game. I think Carolina keeps it rolling. Big ball game for North Carolina. 8:00, Charlottesville. What is it? ACC Network. Is that what is on? That's Halloween night. Greg Barnes, I assume you'll be there, Greg?
I will.
Greg will be one of the little over 1,000 people in attendance in Charlottesville. Jason, we'll talk to you on Sunday on the day after with Buck Sanders. To our listeners, got a special podcast on Friday, something special from our friend Joey Powell. And, of course, check us out, Joey and I, out on Inside Carolina Live Saturday. I guess that's from 5 to 7, leading into Tar Heel Sports Network pregame show on your affiliates. Guys, appreciate it. Y'all be safe.
It's always fun.
All right. Thanks, Tommy.
Thanks, Tommy.
Thanks for listening to another podcast from InsideCarolina.com. Brought to you by JohnnyT-Shirt.com. Where to go for your next Tar Heel gear purchase.
This is Tony Kornheiser's show. I'm Tony. You expected someone else? So what exactly is the show about? I don't know. It's a sports show nominally. Football's over, but we're finally at a point where things matter in college basketball, and baseball season is on deck. Greatest three words in the English language, pitchers and catchers. We have some of the best voices come on and explain what matters or what makes an upset, like Ryan does, 9-8. No, that's not an upset. No, yeah, it is, Bob. And if you're lucky, I might just tell you about my search for discounted sleep pants or my worries about what my dog just ate. Listen on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.